Hello, everybody, and welcome yet once again to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. Yay! I am your host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Analfo, Chris Sologi, Patrick Mifflin, and Teresa Sammons.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
So this episode is going to be for July 22nd, 2016. And, well, you probably already have a good idea of what we're going to be talking about this week.
Yeah, some stuff happened, so we'll be talking about that in a bit.
It wasn't quite as eventful as we thought it was going to be, but some interesting things still happened. And, of course, we'll be talking about some other stuff as well. But first and foremost, we should start, of course, with what it is we've been doing. So, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, I'm still plugging away at The Wheel of Time. I'm about a quarter of the way through the 13th book already. Yeah, turns out that 13th book was probably the best one that he wrote. So, yeah, it's kind of easy to get through and very entertaining. So my goal of finishing the entire series by the end of the year is definitely well in hand, for sure. So looking forward to finishing up that. I'm also melting, so yeah, that's a thing.
Join the club.
Yeah, so yeah, it's hot. Canada, you know, you're usually not really supposed to have super hot weather, but yeah, we kind of are getting some of that. I've been doing my usual things where, you know, listening to records and, you know, going to thrift stores to try to find some new records and stuff like that. And I kind of struck out this week. There wasn't really anything good over there. So that was kind of annoying. On the gaming front, well, I've been playing a little game called Lumo. Not sure if any of you guys have heard of this.
I may have heard of it.
Yeah, it's remember those isometric puzzle platformer games like back in the day? Like, well, there's a few of them on Rare Replay, like Gunfright or Nightmare or Underworld, like those types of games. You know, The Immortal or Landstalker on the Genesis.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Those kind of games. Yeah, this is kind of like a modern take on those. It's a modern take in the sense that it's using modern graphics, but pretty much most of the old school sensibilities and design elements are there. For example, this game has no instructions whatsoever. So it basically tasks you with sitting down and actually figuring out how to play it. Which is very refreshing, you know? I kind of like it. There's also, you know, there's two different modes in the game, where the adventure mode, which is basically unlimited lives, and you have those dastardly modern conveniences like save games and a map. And then there's the old school mode, which has a finite number of lives and no map and no save. So, you know, if you're that kind of a purist, you can play it that way, or you can play it, you know, more lightweight way in the adventure mode, which is how I'm enjoying it, because, yeah, it's basically one-hit deaths, so, yeah, you kind of need that. Yeah, it's a good little game. I'm actually kind of, I hadn't heard of it before, and then we got a code for it, and I'm like, well, okay, nobody else is doing it, so I may as well. And, yeah, kind of very pleased that I did.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll be writing that up for this weekend because this week we are getting our Brutal Keys. Just putting that out there.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Wix, we need to get him back on the show.
Yeah, working on it.
Yeah.
Already reached out to him. He's more than amenable. Just got to work out the timing. So we'll have him back.
That'll be another good episode for sure.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Now that Brutal is finished, maybe he'll actually be able to start Trails in the Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, once that happens, I would not expect another game from him in a couple of years at
least.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah. So that was pretty much my week. How about you guys?
All right, what about you, Pat?
Well, I went to a couple of Eldritch Moon pre-releases, which is the new Magic set that officially launched today, I think. The first pre-release was nothing really to write home about. I think the Gaia Reach Sanitarium was my promo card, and not a whole lot in my rares to... to discuss, I suppose. Saturday night, on the other hand, basically my pre-release pack was not the kind of pre-release pack you're supposed to be able to open at a pre-release, because the big new mechanic in Eldritch Moon is creatures that sort of fuse. Like, transformation was the big mechanic in Shadows over Innistrad. You fill a certain condition, you can flip the card over, and it becomes something else entirely. Well, now the transforming or the fusing creatures are also two-sided cards. You fill a certain requirement, you flip them both over, and put like one on top of the other, and it makes it just a giant card with the backs of the other two cards. And I happen to pull both halves of the best one in the set.
In the same pack?
No, well, in the same pre-release pack, which is one promo card and six booster packs.
Okay.
Wow.
And what happened was my promo card was Bruna the Fading Light, which is one half of it, and well, I'll get to her in a minute. I opened up one of my four Eldritch Moon packs, and not only did I have Gisela the Broken Blade as my two-sided card, my rare was Liliana the Last Hope. So there was about $50 worth of cards in that one pack.
Yeah, I'd say you did pretty well there.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I didn't end up playing the Liliana in the tournament because the rest of my black pulls were just trash. But I went... I actually went white-blue and just... Once you flip Gisela and Bruna, they've got vigilance. It's really convenient. You don't even have to tap them. They just sit there in the middle of the board like a giant fucking problem and and thump people for an 18 life differential every turn. Yeah. So what happens is Gisela is just a really good angel creature. She's a four drop. 4/3 flying. First strike lifelink. Now that's fantastic on its own. She's the one that has the fusion condition too. At the end of your turn, if you have Gisela and Bruna in play, flip them over, transform them, and they become something called Brizella, Voice of Nightmares. Bruna has language in her card that gives Gisela full free license to just go ham, because you don't have to keep her alive to get to satisfy this condition. Because when Bruna comes out on the board, she reanimates any human or angel in your graveyard.
Yeah, so I could see that as being very, very irritating for someone.
So you can just keep swinging with Gisela until something kills her. Enjoy all the lifelink gain you get from that. A few turns later, drop Bruna. Reanimate Gisela from the graveyard. At the end of the turn, you have Brizella, Voice of Nightmares, which is 9/10, flying, vigilance, first strike, lifelink.
Whoa. Go over that again?
9/10, flying, first strike, vigilance, lifelink.
What's your cost? What's your mana cost?
There is none. It's just that when Gisela and Bruna are on your battlefield at the end of your turn, they turn into that. And that's not all the language on the card either.
Yeah.
Because there's a clause that makes it that takes it from stupid to utterly broken.
Yeah.
Your opponents cannot cast spells with converted mana cost 3 or less.
Oh.
So how much of the removal in the format does that just undercut?
Yeah.
You can't gosh.
You can't Declaration in Stone. You can't Anguish Unmaking. You can Languish, but they'll live through it.
Yeah. So it's basically just this comes out at the end of your turn, and your opponent may as well just go, oh, crap.
You're going to have to use something that's already out into play to deal with the situation.
Yeah.
That's good pull.
That's crazy stupid.
So I did a lot better in Saturday's pre-release. And as far as non-magic stuff goes, I've been playing a little bit of I Am Setsuna. I'll be writing up the review for Smashpad here as soon as I finish the game. Also, being that this is the last night of my vacation, I've been, with Teresa's help, thankfully, getting my resume together and finally plotting my escape from Walmart before I have to go back to work and basically get my workforce-related faith in myself decimated all over again. So I've got some pretty good prospects on that front, and it'll be nice to get into some kind of Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 kind of deal.
Yeah.
I would, just as a personal bit of advice, I would burn that mother down as you're walking out.
I'm going to be the voice of reason and say, don't burn bridges. I know it's more fun to burn them.
No, the only thing that I will have trouble with is not talking about certain things once I'm out the door.
Yeah. So no strongly worded letter referencing eagle semen.
Nope. At least put it in comic sans.
That would be the most interesting OSHA visit ever.
Oh my, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Just write your letter in comic sans and nobody will take it seriously.
Hey, you better hush. If you knew what I was doing to his resume, you would, anyway.
Well, I just dropped the magic-related stuff in the chat so you can see the cards yourself.
Cool.
All right. Okay, then. So, Teresa, how about you?
Well, aside from doing a little bit of word crafting with Pat here, I have been working on stuff. I did do about an hour of Project Setsuna. That was, it's beautiful. I mean, it's graphically beautiful. I haven't gotten into it enough to really, you know, weigh in with my two cents. So I've been doing that. I also discovered
a good team for that game.
Oh, yeah. I also discovered a little game called Anarchute, which is a, an anarchy mob type game with cute little forest critters. Oh my god. Well, and squids too. They don't live in forests. Well, they don't live there long, at least. And
well, if you've ever seen squid bellies.
I have. Oh my god, they're funny. I forgot about that show, man. I gotta rewatch that this fall. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV.
Yep.
Too much, indeed. But having fun with it. Having a lot of it. I worked on a lot of my crafting this week, which, is not everybody's bag, but I kind of like it, and it's a good way to earn some cash. So, played a little bit of Pokemon Go. Not a lot. It's kind of, been hot, and
yeah.
I'm going, so... It's no fun to sit in the condo and play it. And general media stuff. We finished up Gravity Falls. That was good. That was nice. And I watched where they've been doing kind of like a geocaching riddle thing. That's been in the news lately. If anybody's interested in that, I think they found some stuff this week. And got back to watching Star Trek Voyager because we're still going through in Stardate order.
Okay.
And picked up a novel that I've read before, but I want to reread it because I don't remember exactly how everything goes. So I'm reading The Battle of Beta Zed. Mm. And that's a Next Generation novel set about 2 months after the episode we watched two nights ago.
Who's the author?
I'd have to grab my Kindle. Hang on, you know
what? Is it Peter David?
No, it's not a Peter David one. Yeah, not at all.
So, like, the five of them that aren't?
This is Charlotte Douglas and Susan Kearney. Yeah, I like the Peter David novels. He's got good ones. But yeah, he did write quite a few of those, didn't he?
Yeah.
Peter David is like one of only three writers who regularly who regularly publish tie-in books that I'll actually read.
Yeah. Did you read Imzadi? Because I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be Peter David or it's going to be Max Allen Collin or God, what was his name? Well, one of the guys who wrote for the Black Library. Oh, Dan Abnett.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm not so well versed in the more recent authors as I was with the TNG authors.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them actually was a professor at a university that I attended, and she wrote some stuff, and Laura, Jean Laura, that was her name.
Yeah.
But yeah, Diane Duane and all them, they just, yeah. Good stuff for people now, who like it.
The one tie-in writer I will not read is Karen Travis, and that's because she basically burns every bridge she's ever come across.
You know, that can make it a little hard to enjoy.
Well, she pretty much called Star Wars fans Nazis, so...
What?
Yeah, see, she was one of the big writers in the Star Wars Republic Commando series, and she was really into the Mandalorians.
Okay.
And she's also the primary writer for the Gears of War books.
Yes.
And she also does Halo. She's one of those tie-in writers who has a bad habit of basically forcing her opinion of said franchise into her work. So much so that it can actually affect canon.
See, and that's not what they hire these people to do.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay.
But was that all?
Yeah, yeah. That's quite enough, actually, I think, for me.
Yeah, all right. Chris, what about you?
So I went and saw Ghostbusters. Oh. And my childhood is still intact, thankfully.
That can't be possible. The matriarchy must die.
Get away with that. it's good.
Yeah, from what people have told me, it's actually very watchable.
Definitely.
It's not the greatest movie in the world, but...
No, it's not as good as the original, which...
Neither was
99% of movies are.
Yeah.
So that's not really a huge problem. Yeah, they've done a good job of making this sort of a first part of what's probably going to be a trilogy or whatever.
Yeah, and they've already announced they're going to do a second one. So.
Yeah. Because definitely it takes longer to get started. Like, they don't even have a place to put the ghosts they capture by the end of the movie. Like, that's how they're going with things. Leslie Jones and... I forget who the other one is. Kay McKinnon are both probably the big stars as the... the scientists making the crazy weapons, and Leslie Jones is sort of the normal person. Yeah. And they kind of steal the show quite a bit, especially Kate McKinnon, as she's allowed to be just weird and wacky throughout the whole thing to sort of counter Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig's sort of BFF stuff that they're doing. There's smart women stuff. Yeah, definitely. It's still a really good movie. I really like Chris Hemsworth's role in there as the Annie Potts role, except he's extremely stupid. As in, he gets confused by a telephone in a aquarium. He thinks that's the actual telephone that they are supposed to answer. He constantly gets confused about things, and they kind of hire him just because he's hot. I'm trying to find, there's funny pictures he has of himself. Trying to see if I can find it, but he keeps showing this over and over again of him with a saxophone. Like, which one's better? Okay, here's the image. It's like one of him trying to play it, the other one is just
apparently trying to blow it.
Yeah, and like his glasses, he doesn't have lenses, so he can like scratch his eyes more easily. Like they were just getting in the way.
It's kind of missed the point of glasses, I think.
It's and he plays a big part in the movie later on. And yeah, it's a really fun movie. And there's a couple little weird things. The cameos are kind of cool. They have most of the people in the movie except for Gregory Peck and I'm trying to think who the other one is. I forget who the other major one is. Even Harold Ramis is kind of in it. They have a bust of him in the college that Kristen Wiig is at the beginning of the movie. Yeah, definitely something people should see, especially if you like the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
They're open to something new.
Oh, people having open minds. So.
Yeah.
More on that later.
Yeah, if you very much decided you don't want to like it, you probably won't.
Yeah.
But if you go in at least hoping to enjoy it yourself, it's pretty cool. The other thing I've been watching is Stranger Things, which is the new show on Netflix.
Everybody's talking about that.
Yes, they are.
It is a show from the Duffer Brothers, I think it's called, what they call themselves. I'm trying to look up. Who don't really have much to their name. They made a movie called Hidden last year. Also worked on Wayward Pines.
Oh. But
this is a show that is very much influenced by the 80s. I'll just link you to the wiki page. You can look at the title, the logo, and it'll scream 80s right at you.
Like it's got you can see bits of like
E.T. is very influenced in here as it's sort of focuses on these kids that are embroiled in this weird mystery that is going on as one of their friends disappears. All of a sudden, this weird girl sort of appears in their lives.
Looks like this whole thing is like really heavily inspired by like early 80s Spielberg.
Yeah, definitely.
Like there's a lot of the Goonies here that I see.
Sort of, and then there's a bit of, I'm not sure if it's like Poltergeist or The Thing. So I'm like, there's like a horror element to it. Not so far, it's not really super scary yet, but I can definitely see it getting there as I've seen some weird stuff. It's like, I don't know what's going on here to even know what to be worried about. The very first scene is about a scientist trying to escape this facility, and surprisingly, he gets caught by the supposed monster. The one notable person on the cast is Winona Ryder. She plays the mom of the boy that gets kidnapped or disappears, and she kind of falls apart. So there's kind of a little bit of, like, Twin Peaks there.
Yeah.
She does a good job so far. I've only watched 2 episodes. It's 8 episodes long, so it's they're about 50 minutes each, so it's not too long. Definitely something I'll probably binge watch over the next few days. And it's so far, it's really good.
This really kind of reminds me of that movie Super 8.
Yeah, it feels like if you got rid of the TV, the filmmaking aspect of it,
this would basically be Super 8.
Yeah, broke it up a little bit, stretched it out to, I guess, about 7-8 hours instead of just 2. That definitely could be it. There's definitely like the whole, there's this weird, it's weird guys in a lab that are kind of the opposing, threatening government force.
Yeah.
Except they actually have guns, not walkie-talkies.
Yeah. Originally, they had guns.
They actually do have walkie-talkies. They got burned.
Yeah.
That's what you call a steel burn.
Yeah.
The boys have walkie-talkies.
You know, I just realized, I kept thinking, what else does this thing remind me of? Any of y'all ever seen Stand By Me?
Yep.
Yeah, this is very kind of like an early 80s Stand By Me.
Yeah.
This is like, this seems like so incredibly 80s. I've got to watch it.
This is
Netflix, so.
Yeah, the poster for it right there, that's 80s as hell right there. Yeah.
God, that kid right in the center there even freaking looks like River Phoenix.
Yeah, that's the girl that they find.
Yeah. God damn.
So that is, that so far is really good. Looking forward to,
oh man,
watching more of that. Okay. And, I've also been playing Witchin Hero 2, which is a 3DS game. I think the original is on Steam now. It is a single screen version of Ys.
Okay.
As in, you move your character around and bump into stuff and kill it. And
so Ys 1 and 2.
Yeah. And, they're kind of a bunch of levels. You control both the witch and the hero. In the first game, the witch was a statue. You sort of collected blood to fill up a meter for the witch, and then when you fill it up, she came to life and cast a spell, shoot out projectiles, and that's how you helped defeat enemies. But in this one, you control them both. So on the 3DS, you control the knight with the left stick or the D-pad, and the witch is the face buttons. You have the new 3DS, it's that little nub, which I end up just leaving the witch in the middle and just running around with the knight. It's basically all about grinding and just killing as many of the enemies as you can. Because generally, most of the levels end when you just reach a certain time. So you're just trying to collect as much of the experience gems and the money as you can. And that'll help level you up. You spend the money on upgrades. Upgrades are attack, defense, speed, and then the 2 spells for the witch. And then basically the way that I play it, most people I've known play it, is that basically you play as far as you can get until you're kind of too weak. Then you go back to the beginning and play through again, sort of grinding constantly.
Yeah.
Even keeps track of how many levels you've beat. That was very much true for the first game, and it was very much like a cult favorite kind of game. Especially as like a game that probably very few people knew about. Definitely is fun. I'm playing through now. And the thing they've made better to lessen the grind is that every new level you beat, you get a bonus to the experience and money you receive. So it's less so much that makes it a little bit easier to bump you up. So like at the point where I'm at, basically I get enough XP bonus that I generally level up almost every single new level.
Mm.
So instead of just getting like a small regular bump, now I'm just getting bigger bumps that I could keep going a little longer. Then I end up just going back grinding anyway. It's like, well, if I'm just going to barely scrape along, I might as well just go back and just really push myself up. Because why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so far been pretty good. The original definitely is on Steam. I remember seeing that in the last Steam sale. It's like $5. I think it was $4. But yeah, something to check out. And still playing a little bit of Rocket League, Pac-Man 256 here and there.
Yeah.
Just filling some of the gaps. Whenever I got some time, I can put in a few matches that are grind towards a new power-up in Pac-Man.
Hmm.
I think I've gotten closer to that 16 times multiplier achievement. I got the 14. Which the trick is you just try and keep going up, get new pellets.
Yeah.
And I'll reset your bar. Yeah. That's pretty much it. So how about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first and foremost, I have been playing Setsuna. And
that's rare.
Yeah, that game will fill the only ones not playing varying it. Degrees by the Day Zero update.
Yeah, it is absolutely. If you are a person who has been looking for a truly old school story driven JRPG, this is what you've been looking for. 100%. It is. First of all, it is very linear. I will say that. But then again, JRPG. They're kind of linear by nature, mostly. And, you know, it's basically battle system is basically a carbon copy of Chrono Trigger's battle system, which is not a bad thing, but very much a good thing, because Chrono Trigger probably had the best battle system of them all. The only thing that might be a deal killer for some people is if you hate snow and if you don't like pianos. Because this whole world is basically covered in snow and the music is 100% piano. Well, no, scratch that, 99.8% piano. There's... Yeah. A little violin in one track.
It's like Vince, what's his name, from Peanuts, has been resurrected and did this soundtrack.
Yeah, I do think that was a little bit of a misstep, just because it felt like a lot of the compositions were livelier than the piano alone can help them come off.
Well, yeah, but then you also have to remember that Tokyo RPG Factory was, by its nature, running on a smaller budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, for what they did manage to compose, though, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. I mean, yeah, it is solely piano, but you play piano right, you don't really need anything else.
Yeah.
So, on top of that, I went and pre-ordered No Man's Sky. Because I don't pre-order games that often anymore, but this is the one that I thought I kind of had to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
just because literally everything that has been shown of this game has just implied that this is a must-buy for me.
Yeah.
So there's that, and of course, I've been spending the last couple of days listening to Steely Dan's album, Asia.
It's a fantastic album.
It is pretty much one of the few examples of a perfect album.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably the best recorded album. If you're an audiophile, it's one of those albums that's a required listen because of the way it was recorded. And plus, you know, Steely Dan is one of those bands that I like them. I didn't really get them until I was older, though.
Yeah.
Steely Dan, I mean, they were pretty popular in the 70s, you know, even though they only toured for like 2 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing about them is their music is very low-key. And it's one of those things that you have to be in the right mind and the right sort of part of your life to really get it.
Yeah.
But once you get it, you pretty much can't stop.
Yeah.
And Asia is one of those albums that you can pretty much list that you pretty much have to listen from start to end whenever you turn it on.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a copy on vinyl and not having much luck yet, but.
I would not be surprised if you don't, because that's one of those albums that when people have it, they rarely give it up.
Yeah.
Asia is probably the one of the great vinyl albums.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it sounds great no matter what medium you're listening to in it, but vinyl is where it really shines.
Yeah.
And of course, really, other than that, I've just been trying to beat the heat.
Yeah, as we all have.
We all have. It's the dog days of summer, and we're basically, you know, it's, you know, Phil talked up a big game about his 75 degrees.
I'm in Quebec. I mean, we're not used to this kind of thing here.
I know.
It's 98 here.
Yeah. You know, you have to remember, though, the thing about the South is that it's not just the heat, it's also the humidity.
Yeah.
There's a follow-up to that statement. Have you heard it?
Mm-hmm.
It describes my time in the South. It's not just the hate, it's the stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, I greatly resent that factual statement.
I know.
Let's see, I'm pretty sure that's about it. Mm-hmm. Oh, one more thing. I recently have started taking up geocaching.
Oh.
Any of you guys ever do that?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I have to admit, it's a weirdly addictive little hobby.
You know, I saw something about people considering using geocaching for spreading bitcoins. I saw
not the least bit surprised.
For those of you out who are listening, don't know what geocaching is. Basically, what it is people will take a little like Tupperware size container and they'll put a logbook and usually some kind of trinkets or something inside of it that can be traded, and then they'll hide it somewhere, and then they will record the geo coordinates of the location and put it up online, and so you can get an app on your phone to, you know, find them, to find the location of them, and you go out and you find it, and, you know, if you find it, you record the date, your code name on the logbook, and if there's any trinkets, you take one, and, you know, it's really simple, very fun little hobby.
It's like Pokemon Go, but for bigger nerds.
Yeah, pretty much.
Real stuff, too.
Yeah,
real stuff. And I was surprised to find out there's quite a few of them in Macon. So I guess when your economy's in the gutter, you got to make your own fun. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much been my week. Anybody got anything else they want to add?
So which version of No Man's Sky did you pre-order?
Just the regular.
PS4 or PC?
PS4. Yeah.
I
don't
pre-order both.
Yeah.
She said, fuck it.
Yeah,
you pre-ordered the PS4 one like you meant it, if I remember correctly.
Well, I pre-ordered the PC version.
Oh. Yeah.
That's why I picked up
PS4. I have to get the PS4 version because my PC isn't strong enough.
Yeah.
To, but also, I don't really do special editions anymore.
Hmm.
I got kind of burned on that one.
Yeah.
With Mass Effect 3. But
I think all the special editions on PS4 are already sold out.
Yeah. So it doesn't. But okay. So
as far as special editions go for me, if it's not in the vein of the stuff Working Designs used to do, I don't even want to hear about it.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on from there, and just so everybody knows, yes, we are aware that the Sonic anniversary party is going on right now.
Yep.
Really,
not only are we
keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, Danrib is there right now. Yeah.
Oh, he went?
Yeah.
He'll give us a report back probably Sunday. Yeah. So,
yeah, they put everything on sale in the eShops.
Yeah, everything Sonic.
Yeah.
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 One or two good games there.
By the way, speaking of Sonic, just so you know, Game Grumps has been doing a Let's Play of Sonic and the Black Knight.
Ooh.
If you want to see Aaron Hansen slowly lose his mind over the span of about 15 episodes.
Is that the second one on the Wii or the first one?
Yeah.
Second one, yeah.
Okay.
It's awful.
Yeah.
I remember the first one being okay. Second one, like,
I'm actually very much convinced that it was not originally a Sonic game. That it was originally something else, and that Sonic team was trying to do something new, and Sega stepped in and said, you need to put Sonic in it.
Yeah.
Need money.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching the stream right now. If Danrib's actually in there somewhere, he's probably hating life.
Yeah. It's kind of packed.
Well, it's packed. It's two douchebags with a MacBook, presumably DJing. I don't have audio because I'm talking to you guys, obviously. Yeah. And I'm kind of thankful for that. While some guy in a Sonic suit who has to be sweating out every drop of hydration in his body just kind of awkwardly dances around.
Well, maybe okay. Crush 40 will come out
this,
and do a show.
This does not reflect well. This does not reflect on a Sega that has gotten its shit together, which is a shame because everything that they've done since the reorganization has come off as though they do.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll wait and see.
Just let whatever announcement
they
come up with not suck, and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you never know. Maybe Crush 40 will come out and do a show. Well,
I don't know.
Anyway.
Okay, so the word on the Sonic and the Secret Rings, it was originally planned to be a port of the 2006 Sonic the Hedgehog game. They said that might be cost too much and take too long. They made something original.
All right. Then.
Probably a smart decision, but was it better? I'm not sure.
Oh, it uses the physics engine on the Wii.
Dude, you're comparing it to Sonic 06.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah, but
kind
have you
of
played
a low
Secret
bar.
Rings?
It's
I've played good. Secret Rings.
Have you played Sonic 06?
Yes. I'm just saying they might have put in a lot of extra work to no end.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so.
A lot of extra work, same result.
Well, then, I guess then it's time to move on to everybody's favorite aspect of the show, another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, I want to ask everyone here, is there anybody here who either plays or has a family member that plays fantasy sports?
I do.
Like fantasy baseball, fantasy football.
Fantasy hockey.
Fantasy hockey. All right. So, yeah, basically everybody knows basically how fantasy sports basically work, right? Basically, you sort of tabulate your own team with real-life players, and then as the season goes on, you use their stats depending on how well they do, and at the end of the season, you use your stats to tabulate points, and whoever has the most points at the end is the winner.
Well, there are variables to that, but yeah.
That's basically the basic premise.
Basically.
It's basically RPGs for jocks.
Sports market.
Yeah. Now, a while ago at another factoid, I talked about how the hobby of miniature wargaming was actually created by an individual who's actually a very major literary figure, that being H.G. Wells.
Yep.
Well, as it turns out, fantasy sports, specifically fantasy baseball, actually has its origins with another major literary creator. And in this instance, nobody realized it until years after the fact. Hmm. And it's not a science fiction writer like H.G. Wells, even though Wells wrote a bunch of other type of stuff. In fact, this particular writer is considered one of the most important writers in American history. I'm talking about Jack Kerouac, the author of On the Road and The Dharma Bums, considered one of the preeminent writers of the Beat Movement in the 50s.
Hmm.
He created fantasy baseball completely by himself, completely on a notion, back when he was a kid in the 1920s. And here's the thing. It wasn't just like the type of sort of fantasy sports now where you sort of come up with your own team and then use your players and then follow the actual games and then tabulate your score at the end. Not only did Jack Kerouac create what is basically the basis for fantasy baseball, it was entirely made up of inventions of his own devising. Fictional players, fictional teams, he would, and as for like actually tabulating these games and how they did, he had come up with the idea of creating a sort of miniature makeshift baseball field in his backyard, and he would use a marble and either a nail or a toothpick to hit the marble and decide on where the ball went. He came up for all types of weird names for these characters, for these players. Like, for example, let's see. And also, on top of that, it wasn't just that either. Like, it's funny because, like, literally the level of world building that this guy did is almost on, like, the almost on, like, D&D levels. Seriously. Cool. So, like, he had players named Lino Love, Warby Pepper, Haney Twyatt, Biggest Cody, and Zach Parker. And he would, and all these teams he either named after colors or cars. So it was like the Pittsburgh Plymouths, the New York Chevys, the Boston Grays, the Cincinnati Blacks, stuff like that. And he collected their stats. He analyzed their performances. And as a teenager, when he was actually really into this little hobby of his, he actually started writing homemade newsletters and broadsides.
Wow.
He even covered financial news and imaginary contract disputes.
Okay. I'm guessing he did this before he started writing professionally?
Yeah, kinda. Although, in hindsight, it actually, supposedly, the thing is, he wrote these very much in sort of the sensationalistic sports writing that was really common back then.
Yeah.
And, which meant he had to come up with a lot of his own, you know, similes and stuff. So it ended up helping him a lot in the long run. Also, on top of fantasy baseball, he also had a fantasy horse racing hobby. Especially during his teenage years, he would actually he would create illustrated tout sheets and racing reports. And as with what he did with the a sort of mini baseball field in his backyard, he created a mini horse racetrack in his room using a board and some marbles that he would roll down the board, and, you know, whoever he would, you know, have particular marbles, you know, represent a particular horse, and that's sort of how he, you know, tabulated all this. And the thing was, it gets even better. These two hobbies actually had a crossover because one of the guys who's like a big financier in his horse racing hobby was originally a player in his fantasy baseball hobby.
Okay, so he had his own little kind of fantasy
universe,
which, you know, given that he's like becoming a writer and looking to do that professionally, kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, it teaches him all those skills that he needs, and you know, organizing a world, organizing characters. It seems like a good exercise for someone to do.
Yeah. And the thing is, none of his other fellow writers in the Beat Movement even knew about it. You know, William S. Burroughs never knew about it. A lot of this stuff people didn't find until after he passed away in the 60s.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, just for anybody who's curious, this is they got a thing here in, let's see, it's a, so, like, there's a part in the New York Library that's dedicated to Jack Kerouac. And they occasionally put on Kerouac exhibits. And one of the publications they put out a few years ago was actually a little 75-page book specifically about Kerouac's fantasy sports hobby. And there's also an article from last year on Open Culture that has, you know, details some more of this stuff. They've even got some of the handbills and stuff for his fantasy sports leagues that he created.
Yeah.
Also some of the stats he did. They even have the pieces of the fictitious, the bits and pieces he used to make, you know, to decide who's playing what in his fantasy baseball. And, you know, they got it, the little box it was stored in, and all this other neat stuff.
Yeah. Just kind of, you know, it's kind of cool to see, like, how someone, like, came up with this kind of stuff. To him, it was probably just a writing exercise and, you know, just making him better, and he didn't think it was a big deal. Probably why he never mentioned it to any of his buddies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he also played himself.
Yeah.
You know, like actual baseball. He played Little League, so. But, you know, he was basically like any other nerdy kid back then.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, you realize that, you know, if Dungeons & Dragons existed back then, Kerouac might have turned out a much different writer.
Yeah. Hell, he might have invented it.
Yeah, I mean, if... You know, as it is today, Kerouac is mostly known for writing these really kind of stream-of-conscious books that are mostly based around his travels that he took around the late 40s, early 50s. So, but, you know, he could have ended up being a fantasy writer if D&D existed back then. But, turns out that, yet again, one of the most famous nerdy hobbies in the world, fantasy sports, was in fact created by a major literary figure. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Thanks. And I think I put that. Yeah, there it is. See, right there in the chat, that's some of the broadsides he created for these particular teams. And that was in his teens, so that was probably in the early 30s.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. So, So I guess moving on from that, we'll go ahead and get our asshole of the week out of the way. And then, of course, we'll follow it up with our hero of the week because we always have to
cleanse the palate.
Yeah. You have to
restore. But then we're diving from that into the RNC.
Okay, so who is our asshole of the week this week? Well, it was Representative Steve King. Now, Steve King is a senator who, well, he's a representative from the House who is notoriously anti-immigrant. The thing is, though, is he's one of those anti-immigrant Republicans who does a relatively okay but not really good job of cloaking it and pseudo-PC language, but not really. Mm-hmm. Did anything I just say make sense?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Basically, he says terrible shit, but, you know, cloaks it just enough so that he can have plausible deniability.
Yeah.
In other words, he's an asshole. But this point, at this week, that pretty much any cloaking he could have done in the past officially no longer exists because he basically outed himself as a white supremacist this week.
Let's be specific. A Caucasian Protestant supremacist.
Yes. Who believes that mostly white European culture has been the primary cultural driver of society, whereas various, in his words, subgroups have not.
Subgroups. Language is a powerful thing. We get a little picture into his mind.
Yes.
Subgroups.
Subgroups. Gee, that almost sounds like subhuman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and just read a little bit from the Mother Jones article that we linked to here in the show notes. For the record, there's actually a video of they also have a video from this. They recorded this and they have this on YouTube also, which is in this link that we provide. So you can basically watch this for yourself and realize that no, there is no way of taking this the wrong way. He's very straightforward and unlike in the past, he does not have plausible deniability this time.
No.
So he's talking with he is on MSNBC. All right, and this is during the was it the first or the second day of the convention? I'm pretty sure it was the second. So one of the co-panelists on this particular thing was Charles Pierce, who is a writer at Esquire, and they were talking about what was the identity of the Republican Party. It was the first day. It wasn't the second. So, yeah, this was the first day of the RNC. Gee, great way to start off the RNC, Representative King. Charles Pierce, the co-panelist, and described the convention halls as filled with loud, unhappy, dissatisfied white people. I hate to disagree, because, first of all, obviously it wasn't just white people. There were other people there, but it was predominantly... You know that one part in Airplane 2 where... Everybody suddenly has Richard Nixon's face.
Yeah,
it was kind of like that.
Yeah.
So he brought that up, and then Steve King, Representative King, pokes his butt in and says, "This," and I'm quoting here, "this whole white people business, though, does get a little tired, Charlie. I mean, I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where are those contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about. Where did any other subgroup of people contribute to civilization?" Hayes, I'm guessing Chris Hayes?
Yes.
The guy who was, yeah. Chris Hayes juts in to ask King if he is talking about white people, to which King pedals back and says that he's referring to Western, quote again, Western civilization that's rooted in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and the United States of America, and every place where the footprint of Christianity has settled the world. That's all of Western civilization. Now, King's co-panelists immediately try to respond, but Hayes cuts them off, saying that they were not going to resolve the issue live on cable news. Later apologized on how he handled King's comments on Twitter, saying that he was taken aback by the comments.
No shit.
But anyway, these are some of the tweets that Christopher Hayes said. First tweet was, I was pretty taken aback by Steve King's comments. I probably should have blown through Beak and let April D. Ryan respond. But, number two, the entire notion of debating which race civilization subgroup contributed most or is best is as odious as it is preposterous. Number three, which is why I said we're not debating this here. But yeah. I hear people who think I made the wrong call in the moment. Maybe I did.
When somebody says something like that, it's kind of a, oh, you didn't even try to color any of that, did you?
His words spoke volumes. I don't think that they needed to go any further. He would have just been letting that guy dig himself deeper in, which is impossible at this point.
Honestly, here's what I think. I think Christopher Hayes should have just let him keep going.
Give him the rope, huh?
Explain.
Yeah, he's like, okay, explain. And just let him, you know, he'll just keep on going. Don't, you know, just let him finish, because by the time he's finished, he would have dug himself so far deeply in that hole he would not have been able to climb out ever.
Yeah. As it is, he did pretty significant.
As it is, he only had to speak about three or four sentences, and now he's in desperate need of a rope ladder.
These are the people that are supposed to represent you guys.
Yeah. Now you understand why when he talks about immigrants, he's only talking about, you know, brown people.
Yeah.
Specifically Latinos and, well, Mexicans specifically. Mm. And he says Muslims, but he really means Arabs.
Well, this guy has a Confederate flag on his desk.
Yep, that's pretty well known.
We already know what he's about. And sadly, this is the part that just slays me. There are people who voted him in, and they probably don't have an issue with that. And that's kind of where we need to focus.
Yeah.
I mean, the
anti-intellectualism that is running rampant in the United States of America, and probably also in other countries, and the way that the media is perpetuating it. You know, we don't have the History Channel showing the things that they showed 15 years ago.
No.
And now it's just, you guys know, we've already talked about reality TV, I'm sure, several times.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is the king of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, if you celebrate people's stupidity, that's a great way to win their votes.
Yeah.
But let me just put Steve King's politics in context, because Steve King represents a very odious part of American politics that's been around almost since the country was founded. Had he been alive in the 19th century, he would have been what they used to call a know-nothing. Those of you who don't know what know-nothings were, know-nothings were basically the equivalent of modern Islamophobes and, you know, anti-immigrant groups, except instead of Islam or Mexicans, their primary ire was against Irish Catholics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a part of a long string of reactionary politics in the U.S. And today, this week, he finally, basically, he inadvertently, I would say, I want to say inadvertently, because despite, you know, all the obvious, he has tried to do his best to hide his very bigoted views Not exactly well, but just enough so that he can, again, have plausible deniability. But he stepped in it, and he's not coming out of it anytime soon now.
Nope. His Wikipedia page is amazing.
Yeah.
It's like a long list of him saying the dumbest shit possible.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of wonder if he really stepped in it, or if people are feeling, politicians of this particular ilk, are feeling like with the rise of Trump and, you know, with the ongoing rise of the Tea Party, too.
Yeah,
you know
what? Hold on to that thought, because we're going to talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah.
When we finish with our hero of the week. Because, yeah, if just, Steve King makes you think, gives you the feeling that you just want to see the whole of the human race go up in flames.
Just going to interject here. We are getting a trailer at the Sonic party right now.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll make sure to, record that or whatever. And, I'm pretty sure they're going to put it up on YouTube afterwards, aren't they?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they need it, not unlike some of the other companies at Comic-Con.
Yeah. Okay. So now we need to talk about our hero of the week. In Muncie, Indiana.
So a new 2D adventure. Reimagined classics.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Sonic 5.
New zones.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Three playable characters.
Okay, so
Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles.
Yeah.
All right.
The ultimate celebration.
Uh huh.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Of past and future. Sonic Mania. Spring 2017.
Well.
This is interesting. It looks like they're remixing old Sonic levels and introducing a whole bunch of new ones in a very straightforward 2D, no-frills Sonic game, which is exactly what they needed to make.
Yeah.
This, to me, basically looks like a... Wait, and for 20... They're not done.
Uh-oh. What now?
Oh, wait, no, they just looped the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Watch it again.
It looks like a Sega version, like an actual Sega-developed take on Mega Mix, which I absolutely love. I think Sonic Mega Mix is the best Sonic game ever made.
Yeah. All right. Okay, then. Well,
this
fingers.
Is the game they needed to make.
Yep. Yeah. All right.
As always, wait until the finished product.
Yeah, that's the thing you have to remember with Sonic games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so, as we were saying, Muncie, Indiana, there's an animal shelter there, and they've got a lot of dogs that, of course, need homes. So, at the same time, they all realize, hey, Pokemon Go is a thing. Why don't we get them to go out and walk our dogs for us? And it's worked. And a few of those dogs have actually found new homes. So
this is brilliant.
Yeah, they had 250 people visit the shelter from the 12th to the 17th. After Phil Peckinpah puts a little ad on their Facebook page.
Yeah. I'm just going to take a wild guess. Is this animal shelter also a gym?
I don't know.
Pokemon gym?
Yeah, I've never seen anywhere that it was stated that it also is a gym.
But okay, then. Facebook noticed it. They're doing a little documentary thing for their Facebook stories series. Yeah, there was initially like a story going around that they were charging people $5 to rent it for an hour. Rent a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Which ended up not being true.
Yeah.
All free. Just want to help get these dogs the ability to go out and have fun for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they took donations, which, you know, people will walk in and give donations.
I think this weekend is, Saturday is a big event across the whole country called Clear the Shelters, where hundreds of animal shelters are removing the fees for adoption. Like, just you have to pay for registration. So even easier to get a pet.
Well, this is a great use of Pokemon Go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, people have been finding a lot of really good ways to use Pokemon Go over the last couple weeks.
Yes, dropping
lures.
Looking
at this story, I saw a few stories of other shelters doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a good idea, especially for people that feel self-conscious about walking around with a phone like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, at least have a dog, so...
Yeah.
Don't look that crazy.
This game is literally getting people out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big deal.
The only problem is they're not getting smarter.
No.
No, unfortunately.
That's the next
baby steps.
Baby steps.
But they're getting out and talking with other people. They're having those micro interactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, in my experience, have been all positive. All of them.
Yeah, there's reports from psychologists and psychiatrists who have said that people who are traditionally kind of shut-ins, and people with, extreme anxiety and stuff, because of this game, they're actually going out and talking with new people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they know they have at least one thing in common.
Yeah. They have that touchstone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, pretty I got it. Yeah, Pokemon Go is actually, I have to admit, despite some people's naysaying, Pokemon Go has kind of ended up being a force for good.
I do a podcast with another network on Saturdays, and every single time we end up just coming back to the same thread, and that Pokemon Go can seriously be a big proponent of world peace.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy, but you know what? There it is.
Yeah.
Every other attempt has failed.
Yeah.
I still let these fake rodents and animals bring us all together.
Will Pikachu finally bring peace to the Middle East?
Maybe.
No, unless the clerics in Egypt have their way, it will.
Yeah, I should also point out along the same lines of Pokemon Go, if you've checked out this week's episode of Know How, they show you how to build an IR proximity sensor that you can wear so that while you're playing Pokemon Go, you don't run into things.
Indeed.
I know they're selling a little accessory that replaces the rumble feature with the app.
Yeah.
So it can tell you when you're near a Pokemon, so you don't have to have your phone out all the time.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Now it's time for us to plunge back into the depths.
Yeah.
So, the Republican National Convention happened this week.
Yep.
And first things first, despite our worst fears, it was not a bloodbath.
Yeah, thankfully.
Surprisingly enough, everybody behaved well. Relatively speaking.
It's like, did you see the bikers that were there?
Yeah, the bikers for Trump.
Yeah, the bikers for Trump, who were more interested in just kind of like standing in front of protesters so that they weren't on camera than actually doing anything. So that was weird.
It's kind of like it kind of reminds me of what the bikers who, whenever the Westboro's people try to do a protest at a funeral, they show up to block the protesters and stuff like that. But so, yeah, despite the fact, and by the way, the Westboro's Baptist Church was also there.
They're also a Pokemon gym.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, indeed.
And then you once they figure that out, you can probably figure out the rest of what they decide to do with that information.
Yeah.
Pikachus with Nazi symbols on them.
Yeah. So, you know, also, probably one of the, you know, and even though things did occasionally get a little tense, especially when the bike cops showed up, they everything kept relatively peaceful. You can partly thank Mr. Vermin Supreme for that, because he was one of the guys who was able to keep everything really lighthearted. By the way, if you don't know who Vermin Supreme is, just look him up on Google. He is an amazing human being.
Yeah.
But so outside of it, well, with one exception, and we'll get to that a little later. And technically, it was inside the convention grounds, but that's another thing. Everything outside of it basically went fine. You know, only about 24 people were arrested, which is a pretty small number.
Yeah, don't think anybody was injured. Nobody died. So
nobody. There wasn't really that much, really any violence to speak of.
Yeah,
with maybe the occasional shoving match.
Yeah,
And then them throwing the American flag over the woman who had a sign of peace and unity. People were grabbing it out of her hands rather forcefully.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Could have been worse.
It could have been worse. So we thank our lucky stars that everything based outside went off mostly without a hitch.
Yeah.
In the inside, however, things did get interesting. So, first of all, we did talk earlier about Rep. Steve King. That was, of course, during the first day, of the convention. So, some things that happened during this convention. I guess probably one of the big newsmakers was Ted Cruz, who, the smug douchebag that he is.
He's still a festering pustule, but I respect what he did.
Yeah. So basically what happened is Ted Cruz went up and he did a speech. And the thing is, as everybody knows, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump despise each other in just the strongest way possible. And
I wonder why he would let him do a speech.
Yeah. And the thing was, you know, Donald Trump basically went after Heidi Cruz, which is Ted Cruz's wife. And then he insinuated that Cruz's father may have been involved in the JFK assassination. Kind of, you know, the Glenn Beck method, you know.
Yeah.
Where you say it, but then you turn around and say, I'm just asking questions.
I don't know for sure, but I heard this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously Ted Cruz was pretty pissed. So he went out and he did his little speech, which was pretty much 100% fluff. And then as the end of the speech started coming, you started to hear it from the New York delegation. You know, they started chanting, endorse Trump, endorse Trump, endorse Trump. And he said, I appreciate the passion of the New York delegation. And then he, you know, did his little speech. And then he, in the end, he said, God bless you and God bless the United States of America. And he walked off. Did not give
and
a...
that's when it got ugly.
Oh, yeah. The whole convention floor was just inundated with boo.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's... all the people, you know, all the big reporters will tell you that was kind of a first.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just a regular booze. It was ugly, angry booze.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he did his little sort of a nobody likes me smile and waved and then walked off stage.
See, I got to take my hat off for this because his trolling skills are superior to mine. That's just... This was like Gary Bettman going out at any given NHL draft and thanking the crowd for their hospitality.
Yeah.
You know, this is, and here's the thing. It actually started getting kind of, it kind of ended up representing that the Republican Party is extremely divided right now.
Yeah.
So who here watches, likes to watch the Young Turks?
Yeah, and, I do that sometimes.
Yeah, so Cenk Uygur did a interview with Roland Martin, right? And Roland Martin was telling a story of, you know, he was in the back, in the, you know, going through the press area. And as he's walking there, there's these two delegates. One of them is from Texas, and I think the other one is from Virginia. And they were nose to nose. Like, he's like, he should have endorsed Trump. He's like, no, he's a man of principles. It got ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty symbolic of where the party is kind of right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, and actually, I guess we also kind of have to remember there was a little bit of drama the first day because the anti-Trump coalition tried to call a voice vote. Well, not a voice vote. I don't think it's called a voice vote. It's a pledge vote or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like big angry chants and everything. Yeah, they lost. It was a pretty pitiful coup. They failed miserably. And so, you know, there was that. Scott Baio was there. Who cares?
Well, you guys did hear about Third Eye Blind, right? Speaking of trolling.
That was cool.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so those of you who don't hear, y'all explain that to those who didn't hear about it, because it's pretty epic.
Well, Third Eye Blind, like back in 2012, had said that when you go and play for the Republican National Convention, it's like you're condoning it, like you're supporting it and endorsing it. And he said that, well, one of the guys said back then that if he went to their convention, he would occupy their convention. And he freaking did. they came there and they didn't play any of their, you know, most popular songs. They did Semi-Charm Kind of Life was on the set list. They didn't do it. They did Non-Dairy Creamer instead, which includes a refrain, Young Gay Republicans, over and over. And when they got booed, they were like, what are you booing about? We're the fucking artists up here. But and they kept on, you know, just trolling him, saying, how about science? You know, who here believes in science and stuff like that?
That was like one of the most epic trolling moments that I've seen at a convention.
Yay.
It's just kind of amazing to me that it comes to this. You know what I mean?
I love it.
And, also, speaking of young gay Republicans, Peter Thiel. Though you don't know who Peter Thiel is, he's a Silicon Valley entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He was one of the big investors for Facebook and other stuff. He also may or may not be the guy who is really responsible for destroying Gawker.
He is.
Yeah, he pretty much is. He's the guy who helped fund Hulk Hogan's lawsuit. So, yeah,
out of spite.
Yeah, purely out of spite. His whole speech, if you can call it that, was basically pure fluff. It was him saying, I'm proud to be gay, I'm proud to be a Republican, and I'm proud to be an American. And obviously it got big applause.
We got a gay.
Hey, we got a gay. And of course the FRC assholes were so pissed about the American Family Association in particular. Their dude who does the radio, he's like, they're in the gates! You know?
Yeah, like they're invading Mongols or something.
So that stuff happened. Then also some stuff started happening, you know, kind of in the press tent. So I mentioned the Young Turks earlier, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Young Turks have been reporting, you know, live from the scene at the RNC all week.
Yep.
And the night, last night, as they were doing their show, who decides to crash the party but Alex goddamn Jones?
Infowars.com.
Yeah.
Railhead himself.
Yep.
Yeah. This was after he had basically more or less gotten his ass kicked by the industrial workers of the world outside the convention center. He was basically trying to shout down a big old group of wobblies that were outside. They all basically bum rushed him and forced him to flee from the scene in his van. So yeah, first of all, shout out to my fellow wobblies. Second of all, yeah, so his ego was already bruised. So he decides, I'm going to come up and I'm just going to start shit with Cenk Uygur. So you know how he starts shank with Cenk Uygur? He brings Roger Stone with him. Now, I need to explain. Who's Roger Stone? Roger Stone is a professional hatchet man. He is the guy who gets hired by whatever particular Republican politician wants to use his opposition research and, you know, think tank stuff to try and basically negatively intimidate his opponents as possible. As far as working for Trump, Roger Stone is responsible for basically threatening the lives of Republican delegates if they got out of line, even going so far as to threaten to dox them. So he's a real piece of work.
Yeah.
So the shit show has already set itself up.
Yeah.
At this point.
So Roger Stone, you know, Cenk and Roger Stone get into a mid-level shouting match, which, trust me, if you're in a shouting match with Cenk Uygur, you'll know when it's at the high point. but in this case, it was pretty mid-level. And eventually, Roger Stone ran away like a bitch, because he is. And then, you know, Alex Jones is still there, and, you know, Alex Jones, he's an attention whore, so he decides, look, I gotta keep trolling these people. So then, you know, he's talking with Cenk, and they're trying to get him to leave the set because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
this is the type of shit that he does. He likes to think of himself like this big sort of, you know, this kind of guy going out to get the truth. He's one of the worst muckrakers that exist.
Yeah.
He is a 100% yellow journalist. He makes shit up and then tries to make himself as the victim.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And then eventually he turns around and says something about, you know, you guys need to keep supporting the Saudis with your jihad. That was fine. That was the final straw for Cenk. So Cenk gets up, he says, "Let me tell you something, motherfucker. This is bullshit." He yanks off his microphone and his jacket, you know, he's like, "Let me tell you something, motherfucker. We oppose the Saudis all the time." Mm-hmm. You know, and it got heated. I mean, people literally had to hold them back.
Yeah, somebody was getting ready to get hit there.
I would have paid good money to watch it kick wholesale ass at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Mankiewicz
eating popcorn.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, Anna Kaspara, everybody knows who she is. She's the one of the main co-hosts on one of the main anchors on the show. Shows up, she starts yelling at fucking Alex Jones. Ben Mankiewicz, the guy who's like one of the co-founders of the freaking Young Turks, takes his jacket off. He's trying his best to hold back Cenk and to calm him down. Jones's people are there with their cameras, and they're also kind of trying, but not really their best to hold him back, because Alex Jones is a freaking nut job, and
they probably hate him.
And the fact
I wouldn't have been surprised if Anna could have dropped him too.
Yeah, and the thing is, Alex Jones, I'm surprised he hasn't gone on a shooting spree yet. But yeah, so eventually what happened is, you know, and you don't see this on camera, but it happened. As Alex Jones is being dragged away by his people, Jimmy Dore entered the crowd and spat in his face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, it was pretty epic. You've got to watch the whole thing.
Oh, my.
Because one of the reasons Alex Jones has been able to get away with this shit for so long is that he's never had to face any consequences for his actions.
Yeah.
Everybody handles him with kid gloves.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's long past time that they start handling him with boxing gloves, because the dude needs a punch in the throat.
Boxing gloves, jeez. Knuckle dusters, dude.
Yeah, I just... The thing is, with guys like that, keep treating them with kid gloves, it just eggs them on.
Yeah.
You know, because Alex Jones is a bully. That's the thing you have to understand. And the thing about bullies is, the only thing they understand is you have to hit back.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to call
there's
them
your
on
crush 40, shit. Brandon.
Yep, I knew it. Judd Sinoe and what's his name are showing up. Yeah, I knew they had to show up at some point. Yeah. But, that was, and yeah, I've got it linked in the show notes. Watch the whole thing. There's also another video they did where after everything cooled off and basically Cenk Uygur just sort of explains what happened. Also, just for the record, because Alex Jones has been lying up and down saying that the Young Turks invited him on. No, that's not the case.
No, I don't really think you could call that being invited on.
Also, InfoWars is a joke. Yes. So, that happened. So last night was the night that, Trump himself was supposed to actually, accept the nomination formally. Hmm. By the way, he had, they finally made it official the second night that was the delegates were in his favor. Hmm. So, that actually is a historical event, folks.
Yep.
That actually happened.
Yeah.
Do you feel good about yourselves, America?
He's now officially a presidential candidate.
But we're going to talk... Well, no, he's a presidential nominee.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in just a minute. The person who actually introduced him was, of course, his daughter, Ivanka. And Ivanka kind of surprised a lot of people.
Yeah.
She actually sounds educated, reasonable, had a very modern-minded.
She didn't listen to her father too much.
Yeah.
So obviously it sucked all the air out of the room.
Oh, it did. The conservatives in the crowd just were not sure how to react. She talked about, and we've got the article, it's from American News X, link to it, and basically she talked about things like she said like many of my fellow millennials, I do not consider myself categorically Republican or Democrat. More than party affiliation, I vote based on what I believe is right for my family and for my country. Sometimes it's a tough choice. And it was like I was like so I'm, no. And I watched this live on CNN, by the way, and I remember thinking, this is going to be interesting.
I'm sure it was that moment when everybody in the building got swamp ass.
Yeah, it's like this is like what's she fixing to say? And then she starts bringing out, she says I'm a woman and I'm a mother, and she started championing the cause of working women, talking about equal pay for equal work, quality, affordable child care, and gender neutral hiring.
Wow.
Talking sensibly.
And as it says here in this article, it says, many women cheered while a lot of men confusingly checked their cell phone screens as if the world they knew might be found there. Some women looked just as confused, apparently torn between showing their loyalty to Trump and their loyalty to conservative principles. Now, you know, so we're continuing from Ivanka's little speech. She said, at my father's company, there are more female than male executives. Women are paid equally for the work that we do, and when a woman becomes a mother, she is supported, not shut out. Women represent 46% of the total U.S. labor force, and 40% of American households have female primary bedwinners. She then claimed that married mothers were worse off in the wage department, far below what single women make. Further, she asserted that motherhood was the biggest factor in wage discrepancy.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing. These are facts.
Yeah.
She's not making this shit up.
No.
No.
And it's at this point that you realize that this is fixing to take a whole different turn. She started talking about things like policies that allow women with children to thrive should not be novelties. They should be the norm. And as the article says, at this point, men began folding their arms across their chest rather than applaud. One woman was applauding until she realized her action was caught by the camera. Then her arms dropped to her side. Women who continued
Awkward.
To clap. Oh, women who continued to clap looked askance at their neighbors as if to see if anyone noticed. The reactions were hysterical, or would be if not for what they said about the GOP and working women.
Yeah.
How sad. Oh.
Yeah, and then, of course, the twits on Twitter decided to speak up and, well, some things said, I was a Trump-Pence 16 supporter, but Ivanka just lost me spewing the falsehood that women earn less than men for same job. Yeah, there's a lot of people who deny all the gender wage gap.
This is the second time today I'm saying this. Do people really believe what they're saying here? Can they not? Have they been to work?
Yeah, well,
have they not?
And these people are at the Trump convention. They believe everything they're told.
This is a true what the fuck moment. Yeah. How can anybody in 2016 not understand and acknowledge that women are paid less?
And understand, it's not like it's some kind of conspiracy.
Oh my God.
It's not some kind of conspiracy. It's a socioeconomic phenomenon.
Yep.
One that needs to be addressed and needs to be dealt with.
Yep.
But the problem is that these alt-right douchebags like to view it as some sort of feminist conspiracy. But, oh, and by the way, probably next week, if there isn't that big of an event, that many events at the DNC, we'll probably talk a little bit about the alt-right, because it kind of has to be talked about. Because Trump is part of that phenomenon. But, okay, so the thing is, Ivanka Trump, the thing is, Ivanka Trump actually represents a part of the Republican Party that is virtually non-existent at this point. And that's because she sounds an awful lot like what they used to call Rockefeller Republicans. Or Northeastern establishment Republicans. These tended to be pretty center-right, and they tended to be, they were up until the Goldwater campaign were basically the average as far as Republican politicians. I can say Republican prostitutes.
We've talked about that more for a second.
That would be bad.
Politicians were the standard bearer. Like,
and
I
what's
said,
the difference
guys,
between politicians and prostitutes?
Yeah, the thing, you know, guys like Nelson Rockefeller, LaGuardia, you know, guys like that, were basically the norm. And then the Goldwater campaign happened, and basically the Republican Party started going further right, until eventually you had Reagan, and then W, and now the Donald. So then, of course, Trump himself came out. First of all, and we just need to say this, Trump's campaign, first of all, his acceptance speech was way too goddamn long. It was literally the longest in history, as long as this has been recorded. And that's both the Republican and Democratic Party we're talking about. The only one who did the long, who was second longest, was actually Bill Plint. So he came out, and basically it was exactly what you thought it would be.
Yeah.
Loud shouting, repetition, empty promises, and fear-mongering.
It sounds like everything the media spews at us every day.
Yeah.
It's also the, kind of play-by-play from the fascist playbook.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. No, I refuse to put any more ambiguity behind it. No, Donald Trump is fascist. There is no ambiguity behind it. I cannot. I mean, his tactics, the way that he literally himself said during his speech, he says, "I alone can help solve these problems."
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it wasn't for the fact that, Donald Trump is a lifelong bullshit artist.
Yeah,
that statement would be a lot more sinister.
Well, I mean, he said he can fix all our problems fast.
Yeah, and the way that he's saying to fix the problems is, when I'm president, give me more power, give me more authority.
Yeah,
this is his way to fix
the libel
things.
Laws.
He wants to give churches the ability to, endorse political candidates without losing their tax exemption status, which is a very, very, very bad idea.
Well, don't we have these things called founding fathers? And did they not
think that's
going to
stop?
Details.
Oh, you think that's not going to stop them? Because, I mean, you're forgetting this is the party that has David Bart. Who has literally done his whole career revisioning history in such a way so that he and all the people who believe him believe that the United States was basically a Christian republic from the beginning.
Not a Christian republic, a Protestant republic. They do not acknowledge Catholics.
Exactly.
You've got to keep that in mind.
Otherwise JFK wouldn't have had such a hard time.
Yep.
Exactly. We mentioned the know-nothings earlier. The shit that JFK had to go through is a...
Yep.
But is an artifact of that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you realize is he tried to play it both ways. He talked about how I want to be so compassionate and caring, and then turned around and said, we need to stop this quote unquote uncontrolled immigration. It was particularly disgusting. Like, what really made me want to hurl?
Mm-hmm.
You probably take a wild guess what it was, because it's in the show notes.
Yeah, the LGBT quote.
Yeah. Yep. So, okay, to Trump's credit, at least the gay thing has never been a big thing with him. And I can't
his
believe
followers.
It. His followers, on the other hand.
Yeah.
They're now, fucking scary.
Yeah. Now, he basically said, he's like, we need to protect our LGBTQ Americans from this barbaric ideology. And I'm surprised he did actually get a pretty large applause.
And pointed out that as a Republican, he was actually happy to see that.
Yeah.
And which barbaric ideology is he protecting them from?
Islamic extremism.
Oh, not other Republicans.
No.
That's the problem.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's...
He didn't say anything about protecting them from other Americans.
Nope. Yeah. Again, he's playing it both ways here. He's trying to appeal to the more modern parts of the Republican base, but at the same time also playing to the more reactionary parts.
Well, and I feel like having Ivanka go up there and talk about being a millennial and not identifying Republican or Democrat and all this other stuff, this was also, in my opinion, a pandering move.
Make no mistake. The reason they did that was because they were trying to get the old Bernie bros in.
Yeah.
Bernie supporters who got burned when Hillary got the nomination.
God damn it. We're still getting burned today.
And so, and he even said that in the speech. He's like, the system is rigged. Look to what they did to Bernie. Now, granted, he's right, but
yeah, well, even a blind chicken finds scratch.
Yeah, but you know, he kind of had a
doesn't mean
to
I'm
going to
sell my
that.
Soul and put him in the White House just because I'm salty over the Democratic primaries.
Exactly. And of course, I can't remember because I actually clicked away because the damn speech was too long. Can he bring up the wall again?
Yeah.
He did bring up the wall? Oh, okay. I was convinced that at some point he was just going to leave that behind, but nope, he is still...
It's red meat for the base. He wasn't going to leave that behind.
And there was a load of dog whistling in that whole speech. And speaking of dog whistling fascism, we just have to talk about it a little bit. Does anybody heard about that apparent Nazi salute that Laura Ingraham gave after the end of her speech?
I heard about it.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure if it really was. It looks a little too awkward.
Yeah, if that was really what she was intending to do, then she cleaned it up real fast.
Yeah. What made me think is that she was doing it the wave, and then at some point she had a sudden moment of self-awareness and realized what this might look like on live television, so she immediately corrected it.
Yeah.
Whoopsie. Yeah, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that she does this sort of thing to troll the media and the people that would be quickly spreading it on like Twitter and Facebook and all that.
Yeah, okay. Hmm. Just so you know, Laura Ingraham is Ann Coulter light. That's just all you really need to know.
That's the best description I've
ever.
Oh
my god!
If you're doing a Nazi salute to troll people, I don't know. What to think about that.
But at the end of the day, Trump did accept his nomination, which means it's official. Donald J. Trump is the Republican nominee for President of the United States of America. That is actually a thing, folks.
Yep. So
don't adjust your TV sets. You know, don't pinch yourself to see if you're dreaming. It's real.
Yep. So be advised. Your vote really actually does matter.
Yeah.
Don't do like Brexit and vote for it even though you didn't really want to.
Yes, we've seen what that will do. And for the record, I'm not going to say, just because I just want to say this, if you want to vote for a third party, I don't want to stop you, because honestly, I don't like Hillary Clinton either.
Apparently a big part of this convention was just trying
Hillary
to...
Hillary Clinton is the devil?
Yeah.
Well, that's been the...
Lock her up and stuff like that.
Well, let
lock
me...
her up.
I think I know where you're going with the Hillary thing.
Yeah.
And let me just remind people, there are two Supreme Court justices who likely will die or resign in the next four
years. Maybe as many
years.
As four.
Yeah. Hmm.
As many as four? Jeez.
Yeah, they're pretty old.
Yeah, they're all getting pretty old.
Okay, these people are, whoever gets nominated, they're going to serve for like the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Because these people live forever. I am convinced that they have them on some sort of nanoprobe technology or something.
And you look at the Bush appointees, he got young people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not young anymore.
Nope. They're not, but they're still going.
They're young in the context of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have to vote for the next Supreme Court justices as well. All the people who are salty about Bernie.
For the record, I'm actually not about the Bernie thing. It's just,
I am not, nor have I ever been Bernie or bust. I supported him in the primaries. I would have loved it if he'd gotten through there.
Yes.
But
for
at the end
record,
of the day.
And I want to point this out, for the record, I am voting for Hillary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say that really quietly because My parents are asleep. And
I like it. I like it.
But
look, I need to point this out. My family is almost 90% Republican, and I have to be very quiet about this.
So yeah. You have to kind of tiptoe around the whole issue.
But anyway, just for the record, however, if you want to vote for third party, I'm not going to shame you because I completely understand why. But I would also remind that, yes, there is more than stake than just who is going to be the next president.
Yeah.
There is.
And I would say that the Supreme Court is almost the only political issue of this cycle that, you know, above all else.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything else falls under that.
Yeah. So
I got a lot riding on it, and there's currently a little bit of discord in the household because I do not want to throw away my vote because I do believe that's what's going to happen on a third party candidate.
Because unfortunately, that's how the system is rigged right now.
It sucks. It sucks.
Because if I thought that I could, I could actually vote for a third party and it would not throw away my vote, I would happily vote for, you know, Jill Stein in a minute.
In Atlanta, you are not. You would be voting against Roe versus Wade, against the Affordable Care Act, against the Supreme Court, PBS. It's all these things. And I have a responsibility to vote in the way that I think is going to be most beneficial to the future of my child.
And
not just mine, but, you know, every other one in the entire nation. That is a huge responsibility. I do not understand why people don't consider their vote thoroughly.
And I want everybody to also understand.
I think there are a lot of people that this is their first, maybe their second general election as a voter. And they're still thinking with their hearts rather than their brains. They're feeling more than they think. And that's...
You got to put the logic in it. It takes time and experience for that.
Now, here's the thing that I'm asking. Do we believe that this election... Okay, so we know now, of course, Trump is officially the nominee. Next week... Hillary Clinton will officially become the nominee for the Democrats.
Yes.
Now, at the same time, Jill Stein with the Green Party and Gary Johnson with the Libertarian Party, Johnson, for the record, with the recent polls, he's been polling at around 12 to 15%. And Jill Stein around 10 or 9. Now, as far as third parties are concerned, that's actually pretty
significant. Those are strong numbers.
Yeah,
they are.
Especially considering the way the system is rigged right now. So, this may literally be the first, despite the way the system is rigged, this might end up kind of being the first four-party race that we've had. Even though we know that the Democrats and Republicans have the lion's share, the fact that the Libertarians and the Greens were able to get that much support in those polls is pretty significant.
If they can actually get into the debates, that would be game changing.
Yeah, to do that, you basically have to pull around 15.
Yeah.
If you pull around 15, that means you can also get federal funding.
Yep.
So, yeah, if they do that, they can get them on the debates. And part of me really believes that no matter who is going to win this particular election, it's Clinton. It's Clinton. It's Hillary Clinton. She's going to win.
Well, one of the things that, like, when there are unsavory candidates in a political election, I mean, it happened here in Quebec with in our local provincial election when we had Pauline Marois, the separatist.
Mm-hmm.
basically as our Canadian Quebec representative. There she was supposed to, she was running. What ended up happening was people who normally didn't vote went out and voted.
Yeah.
And she lost by not an insignificant margin.
No.
So hopefully that's something that will happen here.
Yeah. I don't want to say never because.
Yeah. Well, just W. Don't.
Yeah.
And I don't want anybody to be complacent enough.
Yeah.
So yeah, go out and vote like your life depends on it, because it does.
Yeah. I live in a deep red state, and I'm still going out and voting in November because everything matters.
Yeah. Now, the thing you also have to remember, and whoever it is, and this is just me, despite who wins the election this year, Clinton, this may very well be the first death nail. Well, it may be the final death nail in the coffin of the two-party system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because Donald Trump has created a rift in the Republican Party that is probably irreparable.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump has basically single-handedly managed to break the American political system.
Yeah. And the
Ted Cruz just stepped up to the arcade machine because he was the one who knew how to put in the fatality.
Yeah. And then see what happened
that's the best analogy I can
think. Oh, my gosh. Well, then Schultz has pretty much done the same thing to the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Now, in at least in this case, Bernie was able to get on the committee for creating the party platform. And so some of his issues like student loan debt and universal health care, stuff like that, managed to get on. So, you know, obviously that's non-binding, which, as you can clearly see with the RNC one. But it means that his influence is there.
Yeah.
And obviously the shenanigans that happened with the caucuses and everything and the superdelegates showed that there is a major problem with the way the Democratic Party is being run right now. They do appear a little bit more unified, mostly due to the fact that, you know, after all that, you know, just after all the stuff that happened between Bernie and Hillary.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm guessing whoever wrote this one to say all of this is culminates from some stuff that kind of started happening in 1994.
That was what I put there.
With Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
So you need to kind of explain to some of the younger people what happened then.
Well, that was the big Republican uprising when there was just a lot of anger about Bill Clinton winning the White House and taking America in what was at the time a much more progressive direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican Party, it was kind of the groundswell, the start of what we have today. And Gingrich kind of rewrote the book on partisan politics. We were saying earlier, we were talking how language matters.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that in there. It was introducing the concept of regularly demonizing the opposition. Like he said something like, if your opponent is in favor of gay rights, you call them anti-family, things like that.
Yeah.
And that was what, I really feel that was the origin point of just how intense and visceral this whole, the whole political landscape in this country has become, because it all goes back to that point. And this, the Trump campaign is basically the culmination of all that. This is the end game for where all of that began.
Yeah.
And if Gingrich had known at the time that what he was doing was basically writing the beginning of the end of the Republican Party, you know, Would he have done it?
I would because, like to say no, but Newt Gingrich is an amoral sociopath, true. So...
Yep. Yep. And he didn't care because it was a personal vendetta at that time.
That was also, I think, the same year that he brought out that quote-unquote contract with America.
Yep. Yes.
Bullshit. Which was a giant public stunt that nobody gave a crap about except the press.
Yeah.
There was one meme going around a while back that said... establishment Republicans are now completely horrified after years of sowing the dragon's teeth of partisan politics that they have grown an actual dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what all of, you know, the circles I've run in, that's what all of them say was like, you know, you guys look so surprised. This is the fruit of your labor.
Yep.
This is what you spent the last couple of decades creating.
You built that.
I mean, this shit got started. I mean... Really, you could say this shit started with Reagan, but...
Yeah.
It but just got...
Reagan was good cop to to Gingrich's bad cop, you know?
Yeah. What eventually... So, with that, we'll go quickly just a little bit of news from the Democrat side. Hillary Clinton officially announced her vice president candidate, and it's going to be... Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine is the former governor of Virginia. He's a Catholic Democrat. He's, as far as Democrats go, pretty middle of the road.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a smart decision politically because, number one, Virginia is a swing state.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, he speaks fluent Spanish. So you can see why that would be an asset in this case.
He also plays harmonica.
Yeah. Please, I play harmonica. But, so there's that. The DNC will, of course, be next week. Obviously, they got a pretty solid lineup of speakers. Obviously, Bill will be there.
Let's just hope that there's no violence, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you can manage to get through the Republican convention without any violence, I think maybe Democrats would be okay.
Yeah.
I still do run in a lot of pro-Sanders circles on Facebook.
Yeah.
And Stu in Philly has been a very consistent... message. So who knows what's going to happen.
Then again, you have to remember there are generations of Republicans who've been raised to believe that Hillary Clinton is the devil incarnate.
Yeah.
So there's also that.
Yeah.
So there is also, let's see, who else is going to be there? Well, Bernie's going to be there, obviously. He's going to be giving a speech. Who else is going to be there? What's her name?
Warren?
Elizabeth Warren's going to be there.
Probably should have been the running mate.
Yeah.
You
would say that, but honestly, I want her to stay in the Senate because she's...
That's true.
I don't want to do anything that's going to take her away from her Senate
that's
duties.
That's true.
Unless it's to go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, unless it's the Supreme Court, in which case, yes, by all accounts.
Hmm.
Well,
what I think would be the best thing as far as the Supreme Court nomination, because it looks like Merrick Garland, Obama's pick, is not going to get his chance with Congress. What if Hillary Clinton's Supreme Court nomination for that seat was Barack Obama?
Well, he would be qualified.
Yes.
Yeah. More than qualified.
And they don't have to.
In fact, arguably, he probably more qualified to be president, if you thought about it. Despite the stuff he managed to accomplish in his presidency. But
she could nominate her own husband for the Supreme Court.
If she wanted to.
Yeah.
I would not recommend
I would still love to read Bill Clinton support or dissent papers.
So we're going to be doing that stuff. And like I said, Bill himself is going to be there. That's going to be kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Obviously, the fact that, you know, a woman will be the nominee, official presidential nominee for a for one of the two major political parties will in itself be a massive game change, massive game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The fact or the fact that she more than likely is going to be end up winning the presidency is also going to be pretty impressive, because we went from the first African-American president to the first woman president literally within just two administrations.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the day is announced, when her win, I want y'all to imagine it. Let's whisper of a dream. This whisper of a dream. Hillary Clinton wins the presidency. What do you think is going to be the immediate reaction from the conservative media?
The same thing they did before.
We've already
seen it. And then when she was running against Obama, way back when, we saw it. We know exactly what's going to happen. It's just going to be a bunch of old Caucasian guys squawking their heads off, along with the fool women that they've convinced to take up arms against their own kind.
The ones that apparently have not been sexually harassed by Roger Ailes. By the way, officially stepped down from the head of Fox News yesterday.
He got a hell of a golden parachute, though. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah. It was several million dollars.
$40 million on the way out.
I was so disgusted.
He could buy a shit ton of games with that.
Yeah. So, with all that said, should we go ahead and wrap up?
Yeah.
Well, I think I would like Pat to wrap up Bleach, because we touched on it last week, and I think it's important.
Yeah, we'll talk about Bleach real quick, and then we'll end it. Okay, so those who don't remember, Bleach's ending was officially announced, and
it'll be sometime next month.
And what is likely the final battle ended in chapter 683.
Well, it is the final battle, but we're not sure if it ended, because literally what should be the final attack was the final panel of the chapter. Kubo does that a lot.
Yeah.
Hopefully that ended it so that we can get at least 3 to 5 chapters of epilogue.
Yeah. Which at this point is the only way that he could end it semi-successfully.
Yeah.
Really?
There was it ended the way I think it had to end if they were going to wrap up the battle quickly.
Yeah.
At some point or another, Aizen slipped the Kyokusuigetsu ability on Yuha. And then used that to open him up for an attack by Ichigo. Taking a fatal attack in the process. I'm not sure why that is. Aizen is the furthest thing from stupid, and the Kyokusuigetsu is so overpowered that it can make a person argue with cats over the origin of mustard. But
so, basically the question is, why would he willingly accept that attack?
Yeah.
If that is, in fact, the death blow.
Yeah. Well, he got a giant hole punched in him, so...
So he's got other problems, so...
So hopefully... Yeah, what happened was Yuha grabbed Aizen, thinking that he was Ichigo, punched the giant hole in him, and then got run through and cut in half by Ichigo at the end of the chapter.
Oopsie.
And so they're going to have to explain why Aizen took that attack when I don't imagine he had to, unless the Kyokusuigetsu was considerably weakened or altered, which is possible, but again, it has to be explained.
Yeah.
Really good chapter, though. I highly recommend reading it or going on YouTube and watching one of the sort of...
recap things that people...
Well, no, it's not a recap thing. They take the chapters and almost make them into episodes.
Yeah.
Shout outs to the people at Soul Madness. They do great work.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I'm gonna kind of miss Bleach.
Yeah. So hopefully the next however many chapters are left will give closure to all of the loose ends that I talked about last week.
Yeah, but he's gonna have to pull some incredible shit out of his ass to pull that off.
Of course, they did have to kill Aizen off. Mm-hmm. If they were going to end the series, because he was one hell of an overpowered arc villain himself. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Maybe it was just that simple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, I guess the next few weeks will be our epilogue, hopefully. And we'll see how he winds this story up. All right. So, with that said, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I think we got a show. join us next week. We are going to be talking about the DNC, and if it's not that eventful, probably some other bullshit.
Yep.
So,
we still got stuff we can carry over.
Yeah. So, with that being said, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Anolfo, Chris Seligi, Patrick Mifflin, and Teresa Sammons, I'd all like to say, go out and vote.
Yes.
Your life depends on it.
And play a lot of games.